Oh, that's right. We're right here. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Meet Me at the Diner, 4:07 in the afternoon. And one of my favorite legislators is sitting across the table from me this afternoon. Mike Pitts, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I hope you are.
I am. Looks like you might have spent some time at the beach.
I did.
Yes. The top of your head is tanned very nicely.
Well, it's easy to tan. It has no cover. It's easy to blister, too.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. So the legislative season is now over. Do you have to go back anymore, or is it done?
No, it's I serve on ad hoc committees, joint oversight committees, as we've discussed before, and ethics. So, no, I'm not done. Session is done for the year, sine die, as of last week. But, no, my time's not over. This part-time job, it continues for me several days a week the rest of the year.
You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, talking about the budget and how the vetoes were, Governor Haley's vetoes were overturned, and not overturned, but one of them that I thought was interesting was the $1,000 a month increase in salary through for legislators. Now, that one in the House, y'all voted to keep the increase.
That's correct.
But when it went to the Senate, they changed their mind.
Changed their mind is the correct term.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because originally they all voted for it, didn't they?
They did. We didn't put it in the House. It was not part of the House original budget. It was put in on the Senate side.
That's what I thought.
And I was asked early on, as a budget chairman, would I support it? And I told them yes. It's in district expense. Some of us use it for that purpose and some don't. And there's a wide disparity in delegations and how they're funded and how their expenses are covered.
We've had that experience here in Greenwood, Mike, on the local level on our county council. We had that experience with in-district expense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But so why did they change their mind?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the Senate on that one. I think it might have been a test of courage.
They didn't have the courage of their convictions?
That would be my guess.
Because, I think it was interesting because Governor Haley was very much against it, vetoed it going into it. Y'all got it back. A majority voted for it, and then it goes to the Senate. I would have thought it was a slam dunk.
Well, it was tight, and we knew it would be tight over in the Senate. But once they saw that it was tight, rats started jumping ship, and it turned very quickly. The issue is this, Ann. If we don't adjust that in some way, the average individual is no longer going to be able to serve. I'm seeing it on a regular basis. We talked about this once before, not in great depth, but we've talked about it. And that was the loss of Paul Agnew's, a prime example of that, over in Abbeville County. Paul and I didn't always agree politically, but Paul Agnew had as high an integrity level and a desire to do what's right for his constituency as anyone I've seen in the 12 years in the General Assembly. I had no question of his integrity, and if Paul gave me his word, it was solid. I didn't have to go back and ask him again. But Paul lost 50%. This is Paul telling me. He lost 50% of his income the first year he was in Columbia. So it cost Paul to serve.
Right.
He didn't make money. He lost money to serve. My suite mate, who is, it's affected differently, who is a physical therapist, he has to hire someone to work in his physical therapy business while he's in Columbia. It cost him about $60,000 a year because of what he makes in his profession. But where it's really going to affect is young people, that 30-year-old to 40-year-old legislator that is establishing a young family, establishing themselves in whatever their occupation is, those people are no longer going to be able to serve. Josh Putnam, for instance. Josh Putnam is a legislator from Anderson County. One of the finest young legislators I've served with. He's not going to be able to stay unless something changes because he's not going to be able to afford to. Heather Ammons Crawford, a female legislator from Myrtle Beach, the same way. They can't afford to stay and serve in Columbia. Switching sides of the aisle and looking over at Elizabeth Munnerling, an attorney from the PD. I serve on her with ethics. There's no one I trust more in Columbia than Elizabeth Munnerling. She's proven to me that she can be trusted, that her word's good. We don't agree politically. She's on the other side of the aisle. We don't always disagree politically. But her constituency's losing her after 4 years in the General Assembly. Now, what does that mean? All people can talk about the perk of retirement. She gave that up. She's leaving because it's costing her money, and it's costing her family money. And I'm going to tell you this one. My granddaughter looked at me last week and said, "Poppy, why do you have to go to Columbia? We were on vacation at the beach. I had to go back for those vetoes." And I explained that to her. She said, "I'm tired of you doing Columbia. I need more of your time." I don't know how I'm going to answer that very much longer.
Well, you're up for re-election now, Mike.
I am up for re-election. I'm running unopposed this time, which... barring one heck of a write-in campaign, I should serve one more term. And I can be effective. I'm in position to be very effective for Greenwood, for Lawrence counties, for my district, for my constituency. And I have enough position of leadership that I can guide legislation. I can guide the policy of the state. Help guide that policy in a positive direction from my standpoint. But it's getting hard taking arrows from all directions.
You know, well, Mike, what do you think the answer is? You know, some states' legislators meet every other year. I think it's hard the way we're situated because it is an intense 6 months out of the year. Do you think there could be some changes made as to how the legislature meets?
Absolutely. The House has passed every session since I've been in the General Assembly a bill to shorten the session. Unfortunately, it's died in the graveyard called the Senate.
Well, why wouldn't they want a shortened session?
You'll have to ask senators. I've never gotten a very good answer on that.
I'm taking notes right here, Mike. I'll get some of these senators on and ask them. But I don't understand, because logically speaking, it makes more sense if you could shorten it up and have more committee meetings during the year that could work. Like, I know you'll be working literally all year long.
Jeff Duncan and I made a proposal years ago, in the first part of this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
January will be a wasted month as far as the General Assembly's legislative session is concerned, because it's following reorganization and it's a new General Assembly.
Sure.
A new House. The Senate will be the same.
And the governorship is up, yes.
But it will be a new House. There are no bills on the table. There will be bills pre-filed in January or in December. Those bills will have to go through subcommittee and committee process. By the time the first bills start hitting the floor, it'll be mid-February. So the month of January could be committees only. If my committee was not meeting, then I wouldn't have to be in Columbia.
Sure.
I serve on the budget committee, or chair of budget committee, so I'd be holding budget hearings, which I'll be doing anyway. But there are several changes you could make. One is the first month of session could be committees only. And then when we convened to begin an actual session, you would have something to do.
Sure. Well, it just seems like, I mean, because it's 4 days out of the week, It's
supposed to be 3 days out of the week, but when you chair committees and budget committee, when you chair prominent committees, you end up 4 days a week. The one of the biggest factors that people don't really talk about, Ann, when you talk about serving in the General Assembly being a part-time job now, is communication, the ability for instant communication with cell phones, with the computer.
Yeah, FaceTime, computers, you can do all this kind of stuff now.
I am constantly, constantly dealing with legislative issues. Today, the ethics hearings are going on. I serve on the ethics committee. The attorneys for the ethics committee have texted me back and forth about issues, not just about the hearings going on, but other issues that we're dealing with also in setting up meetings. I've been texting back and forth with the chairman of the budget committee. Had two conversations with him today. All of that took time. Mm-hmm. All of it takes time to do. Responded to a couple of folks that were asking for resume. And what I'm saying there is, when it was originally constructed, it was horse and buggy days.
Right.
And a letter took a while to travel.
Sure.
And when the assembly was called, mm-hmm. and you met, it was very slow, and your constituency didn't have the bureaucracy and the daggum regulatory agencies and all the issues that I have to deal with trying to navigate through those for them. So,
and the other thing is, when you look at it from South Carolina being an agricultural community, you were off in the summer, right?
That's correct.
And during the winter months, they met. So that's, for farmer-type people, that worked.
Well, it was an agrarian state at that point, and it was also structured around that. As far as your original question about shortening the session or dealing with that, that would be very easy to do if you could get the Senate to go along.
Well, okay, so the Senate's the problem on this issue, huh?
Well, the Senate is the problem on this issue. Okay. Like I said, we've passed a bill in every session for six straight sessions to shorten session, and it's never made it out of the Senate.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to get one of those senators or two of those senators on here, and we're going to find out what the issue is, since they don't seem to want to go along with it. And yet they were the ones that started this thing about the in-district expense and then backed out in the end. Now, what did you think about Governor Haley's idea about a referendum that let the people decide whether y'all should get a raise?
I don't have a problem with that. The issue is the General Assembly, by the current structure, has to vote to do it or not do it.
But if you got a referendum where the people said yes and then you all went back in, you'd feel, I guess you would actually feel good about raising your hand or saying that, yes, you agree with this.
Well, maybe the Senate would have the courage to do it.
Maybe the Senate would have the courage. I can see the Senate's not going to get off the hot seat here, are they, today?
No, not with me, they're not. No. Not today.
Okay. Well, the Senate also quashed the ethics bill.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Another reversal of fortune, if you want to use that phrase, in the Senate. The Senate debate centered on things that they didn't have in their bill to begin with, the public integrity or investigative unit, and an independent oversight. They didn't have either, and that was the debate that they used to kill the bill. So I really don't understand what's going on over there across the building at this point. It looked like mass confusion to me. I saw some stuff that I never thought I would see in our Senate, with Shane Massey attacking Hugh Leatherman the way he did.
But Hugh became the what was he? What's his position now, Hugh?
Speaker pro tem.
Right. And Shane Massey was saying that he had that orchestrated, basically, didn't he say that?
He did. But he attacked Leatherman's character in the process, to the point that other senators were getting ready to call a point of order on him. In a conversation you and I were having earlier, you can attack the issue without attacking the individual. And Massey carried it too far, in my opinion.
Sure. And you know, then, of course, we now have a Democratic lieutenant governor. That was an interesting turn of events, wasn't it?
Well, you had several interesting turns of events lately. Since the point when McConnell gave up his seat.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about that before. I saw the Senate shift gears at that point when Glenn McConnell gave that seat up. And it became a test of egos between Hugh Leatherman and Harvey Peeler, both who want to be number one. And Harvey Peeler can never have that number one tag as long as Hugh Leatherman's in the Senate.
You know, this sounds like one of those things where we need to throw them all out and start over.
No.
Need to do that?
No. You've got some good ones over there, and the guys I'm talking about have been good leaders of this state, but they have let personality and egos get in the way of their mission at this point. They need to take a step back, take a deep breath, and look at the future of the state.
Sure. You know, one of the things you wonder if Lieutenant Governor McConnell, who, when he had to make that decision, being a straight constitutionalist, he knew he had to take that. But now when, who was it, Corson, that stepped down, right, from his position, did not care, was not going there, wanted to keep his power base in his position, in his district.
Glenn McConnell did what he knew he was supposed to do. He accepted the consequences of the position. And you stated it very well. He is a constitutionalist. I firmly would love to see Glenn McConnell as the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. But I would love to see Glenn McConnell as Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court for that reason. He believes in the Constitution to the point that he puts it ahead of himself.
Yeah. What do you think about him going down to become president of the college?
I think kudos for the College of Charleston. They will benefit from a lot of knowledge and a great deal of leadership capability.
Absolutely. I tell you what else, just speaking about Glenn McConnell, one of the vetoes that was overridden was the one for the caregivers, the dollars that she said that wasn't something she was going to approve, but both the Senate and the House kept what was the name of that bill? Something about caregivers, the dollars, what was it, $2 million?
It was $2 million.
For senior caregivers, home and community-based services.
Well, it gives the ability to keep a senior in the home instead of in an institution. And it's much cheaper to do that, and it's much better for the family if they can do that.
Sure. You know, I think one of the things that nobody actually realizes, yes, you have the patient or the senior or whoever, but the family is the one, the people, the caregivers themselves are the ones that get wore out dealing with this, and they can end up actually sick because of this.
And I have worked very hard as a legislator on that particular issue, both in mental health and in physical health. The former chairman of the Healthcare Subcommittee, Budget Committee, and the current chairman worked diligently with both to assure that type of assistance is kept in place as much as possible for exactly what you're saying. It came very clear to me when it became personal. My sister, youngest sister's daughter, was injured, and she became a Terry Schiavo, needing 24/7 assistance. And what I saw was what it did not just to the victim,
mm-hmm.
not just to the immediate family, but to the extended family, because something as simple as Thanksgiving dinner becomes an extensive adventure of logistics, trying to put it all together, because you can't just say it's time to get ready and go get in the car and go.
Correct.
You have it's a procedure. For them, it was a four-hour procedure to get Holly ready to move. So one of the first things I attacked was the waiting list for brain and spinal cord injury, the waiting list. The waiting list was 187 deep.
Wow.
That meant someone had to die that was on the list before anyone moved on to the list. And working with the chairman of the budget committee at that time, Tracy Edge from Myrtle Beach, and his subcommittee, we eliminated that waiting list. And that was a good piece of work, in my opinion, because of exactly what you're saying. It affected the extended family,
sure,
not just the immediate family.
Yeah.
And it affects the community, too. Because in that particular instance, one's a school, father's school teacher, mother's a nurse. One of them's got to stay home now.
Sure.
So the community has lost either a nurse or a school teacher to stay home and take care of that individual.
Absolutely.
Same thing with an Alzheimer's patient or
any of these situations that we're
exactly
dealing with. That's right.
Exactly.
So we're talking here with Representative Mike Pitts. He is going to be here the whole hour. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. It's time for South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. And yes, we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, talking with Mike Pitts, and we're talking about a lot of different issues this afternoon. You know, Mike, one of the things that I think is so admirable about what you do is you get asked to be on committees, and then you go on them, and then you end up working all year long.
Well, I believe if you say yes, you should do the job that you've been asked to do. It's difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
I am learning to say no, though.
You're learning to say no?
Yes.
Well, that's a good thing. Sometimes you do have to say no, because if you don't, you just get more stuff piled up on you. That is for sure. Grace, let's go sit down now, please. Thank you, Gracie. I know, Mike, I guess she agrees with the no position.
She says she has to say no sometimes, too.
Yes. She doesn't like to hear the word no. Gracie, go lay down. Thank you. All right. So, the biggest committee, though, that you are actually on is the budget, correct?
What?
Or is there?
Yeah, budget committee would be, or being a budget chairman is a weighty position.
Sure.
Serving on ethics is a weighty position. And some of the oversight committees. Opportunity to serve on a couple of oversight committees with Senator Odell, which is very good, the Rural Infrastructure Authority and the Agency Heads Committee. Both are committees that he and I both serve on.
Why do you think Governor Haley vetoed the first steps? When she was four-year-old kindergarten, correct?
The expansion of four-year-old kindergarten, which I was opposed to. The issue with First Steps was not what First Steps is in our area. First Steps, when you look at it statewide, is as varied as the alphabet from A to Z. And the report that came out a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, I think, was scathing for First Steps in many areas, with no oversight, no ability to measure progress. And even in the better districts where First Steps is, there's still an inability to measure progress to a great degree. Has problems and a lot of money spent per head for immeasurable results at best.
So she vetoed it, but then y'all overturned the veto.
Well, the part of the reauthorization is one thing. Reauthorizing First Steps to try to straighten it out, I think, is probably admirable. Keeping First Steps in place, if we don't straighten it out, then I would have to say Haley was right.
So there'll be, and this has to be done by first part mid next year, the reauthorization of it?
Reauthorization has to be done before the end of the next fiscal year.
Okay. All right. So that is something that's going to be worked on. Now, what do we think about where we are on education here? There seems to be so many questions. Common Core, y'all voted to get rid of that, right?
We did.
Okay. There are some, though, that would lead you to believe that there's still Common Core-ish issues still abounding.
There will be.
There will be. Okay.
Because the education community runs on its own.
It runs on its own.
Yeah. I'll put this in place. I was asked a question today. Why is there not a requirement to teach Constitution and civics?
Civics. We've talked about this one.
That's correct. There is a constitutional requirement to teach it, but schools circumvent it. They don't teach it, or they teach one day. They do a cursory of it. Many schools, not all schools, some still do. Some still teach civics, but it's not a curriculum, a hard curriculum, in all school districts of the state. It should be.
Sure.
You see it. I see it in campaigns that the average citizen didn't have a good course in civics.
Well, I don't think we have a good course in civics when people don't understand what's happening down in Columbia. We don't have a good course in civics when people don't know that Columbia is the capital of South Carolina. I asked that question on my really dumb, really stupid show, and you'd be surprised the answers we get. Charleston and Lexington.
Charleston quite often.
Yes.
And it was at one time.
Yeah. Well, and what do you think about what is happening with this Bobby Harrell issue that we have going on? Where are we going with this one, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, Bobby Harrell, I've not seen anything that said he committed a crime.
Okay.
What he did was used private money, which is donated to his campaign, to pay for flying his airplane around the state politically, mm-hmm. which is legal. He had a technical violation of not having receipts for part of it. He paid that money back. Now, if there's criminal activity in there, as the Attorney General alleges, the Attorney General should be pushing that forward.
Well, I thought he was, but he was stopped, and that's why we're having the Supreme Court.
My question would be, no, the question before the Supreme Court is jurisdiction. Should it be in ethics, the ethics, House Ethics Committee, or should it be in the court system?
Sure.
If it's criminal, it should be in the court system.
But where do you draw the line between the ethics and the criminal?
Is there a criminal violation, or is it a civil violation? And part of your question is a question that the Ethics Committee itself's been wrestling with for a couple of years, trying to get a determination on that. And there was a proposal in the ethics bill that died that was to establish exactly what those are. which is criminal, which is civil. For instance, a civil penalty. If a county councilman is one day late filing his form, that's a $100 fine.
Okay.
That's not a criminal penalty. That's a civil penalty, and it is a technical violation. The same thing would be on the not having the receipt. That is a technical violation. If you used it for private gain, then it can become a criminal violation. But that's up to the investigator to prove and show facts for, not just allegations.
And so has Alan Wilson been able to show this?
Not according to what I've seen, and according to the court system at this point, no. My question for Alan Wilson was and still is, SLED did a very extensive investigation, a very lengthy investigation.
Went on for quite a few months.
It did. And I asked the director of SLED, why is this investigation taking so long? Because it's hindering the ability of the General Assembly to do its job. And he said, when this is over and it's put before review, I want no one to be...
I want no one
to be able to say we left stones unturned. We didn't turn that leaf over. He said, I want it to be so clear, the evidence, yes or no, that there is no maybe. That investigation or the report is in Alan Wilson's hands.
So Alan has... who is the state's attorney, has the report.
He has the full report in hand.
Has it been revealed?
It's not been shown to the House Ethics Committee, nor has a complaint been lodged with the House Ethics Committee. He chose to take it to court. Now, by taking it, if he had brought it to us, if there had been a complaint filed against the Speaker of the House Ethics Committee would have had to investigate, and once, it's very clear, if there is criminal facts of criminal wrongdoing, then we send it to the Attorney General to pursue in court. That is the law. That's what we have to do. If it is not criminal in nature, then it's up to us to determine what happens. We just finished one, a legislator in Spartanburg County. He got fined over $16,000. That's pretty significant.
That's pretty significant, yes.
Yes, it is. And if Alan had concrete evidence, I think he would be pursuing that
through the ethics?
State grand jury.
Okay.
I think that evidence would be in front of the state grand jury. At this point, Alan had... petition the court to seal the investigation.
Now, why would you seal the investigation?
Well, from my perspective,
yes,
as an old police officer, if the facts are there and I'm going to play this out in public court, I want everyone to know what the results were. I want everyone to know what those facts are. If I don't have anything and I'm doing it for political purposes, if I'm playing political football, then I don't want the public to see what's in that report.
Is
that's
this
my opinion.
That's your opinion. Mike Pitts's opinion,
that's correct.
It's more political than anything else here.
I agree. And I told a friend of mine the other day that he just shifted the sights off of himself. on to himself. And that's Tommy Pope. Tommy Pope's a House member from York County that announced he's running for governor in the next gubernatorial
election. Oh, right. I saw that. And they said, who announces in the next one, right?
Well, he just shifted the scope off of Bobby Harrell to him, in my opinion.
In your opinion. All right. Well, we're here with Mike Pitts. Let me see if I can talk to Gracie and find out what's got her so rattled. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos. So I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafé cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery, having a little fun, talking a little politics with Mike Pitts this afternoon. I tell you what, Mike Pitts, we were just talking about Bobby Harrell. I think that has to have been, regardless of the outcome, for Bobby Harrell this year, that has to have been just horrible. You know, I feel for the people, regardless of what happened and everything. I think you feel for the people that have put their lives on out there for everybody and to have to deal with all this. And for what you're telling us, this is something that is dragged on that probably really didn't have to drag on.
I don't think it did. I don't think it should have dragged on to this point. It should not have been contested back and forth, kicked back and forth like a football. If it had followed the natural process of things, I believe it would have been over by now, and it would have all been public. It would have been exposed, and I think it would have been done. But I think people are looking ahead to the future at each other as opponents for gubernatorial races and trying to weaken each other and those kind of things, and that's not good for the state. It's that simple.
No, it's not good for the state. And one other race that's out there that is happening, in fact, you need to go vote. If you haven't already voted, you have till 7 o'clock tonight to vote, is the race for superintendent of education. That's another one that I think was, to me, was surprising, the two candidates the Republicans ended up with between Sally Atwater and Molly Spearman.
Didn't surprise me that much. It disappointed me, but it didn't surprise me. Sally Atwater had the name recognition of her late husband, and Molly Spearman had the experience of having been a legislator and having been exposed to the campaigns before. So those two were front runners. There were things that made me take a step back and a hard look. I told you, Ann, I interview any of the candidates that come seeking my support on statewide races. I give them some time, and I ask them questions. All of us know the problems that exist. I want to know what their solutions are. Some people have answers and some don't. Sally Atwater had none. Is she a likable person? Yes. I sat, talked with her, and had a good conversation for an hour and a half. But I got not one solution to the problem or any problems. Molly Spearman, she should be on the other side of the aisle.
And yet, when she was in the House, was she a Democrat or a Republican?
No, she was elected as a Republican.
Okay.
Molly and I have had some differences on educational issues, and a clear note for me was when I saw Ray Wilson with a Molly Spearman bumper sticker. That told me a lot.
Okay. All right. So that doesn't leave Republicans in a very good position, does it?
Well, in my opinion, no. Some
yes.
of the better candidates had no name recognition and couldn't get their campaign off the ground.
Yeah.
Mika Childs was one. Miss Few was another.
Mm-hmm.
Both, I think, were quality candidates. But no, you had a crowded field, and
you had too many people running.
You did.
I mean,
and we've had that in several races. You had that in the Senate race, U.S. Senate race. You had a very crowded field,
which actually gave Lindsey Graham the advantage.
Yes, it did.
I mean, personally, I will just say this, that I would have liked to have seen a runoff, because I was getting lots of good dollars from Lindsey Graham's campaign, and I was really disappointed there wasn't a runoff.
Well, being out and talking to people, I had a sense that there was not going to be a runoff. And the front runner and our well, the front runner, Lee Bright, was going to get all the votes he was going to get in that first round to begin with, I think.
But it was very splintered. Even if it had been reduced somehow, there might have been a chance for somebody to have pulled out a few more votes there.
If you'd have had one individual, well, they all said, whoever gets in the runoff with Lindsay, we're going to back each other.
Right.
When they looked at polling numbers and realized that I'm polling at 3%, it's time to get out and lower the number in the field. And some of them should have seen that. One of them was a very good friend of mine that should have seen that, but he didn't. And what that would have done is set up a real head-to-head.
Correct.
And given the one candidate the ability to debate the issues head-to-head with Lindsay, and that never really happened. Did you watch any of the debates?
Yes.
It looked like a lynching.
It did. Well, even the moderator said this isn't so much a statement of a different, this is a statement on Lindsey Graham. I mean, he set that up right from the beginning.
And it was.
Yes.
It was an indictment of Lindsey, because you went down the list of each candidate attacking Lindsey Graham, and some of them attacking personally instead of attacking the issues. But it went down the line. Number one, it's your turn. Number two, it's
your turn. Yeah. And Lindsey looked like he was out there swinging all the time. He was sweating. Well, he was out there swinging, defending his positions.
Well, I would have been too.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking at a mob coming at me.
Exactly.
It's been a strange year politically because of things like that. The lieutenant governor's race on the Republican side had several candidates in it. And, part of the problem for me, Ann, is that quite a few of the candidates on my side of the aisle have forgotten Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, and that bothers me.
And what's the 11th commandment?
Speak no ill of other Republicans.
Yes, okay. Well, they didn't do that. You know, Mike, we've got a governor's race coming up here. And, of course, we have an independent Republican running in the race. And, that Tom Irwin guy?
Tom Irwin.
Yes. I don't understand. Why is he running? I don't know.
I don't know either. He's in, he's out, he's in, he's out.
Well, I think he had to have 10,000 signatures, and he produced 20,000 signatures, I do believe, to be on the ballot. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to stay on for just a couple of minutes. What do you think about this, and how do you think the governor's race is going to be with Governor Haley and Shaheen on the Republican and Democrat, and then we've got Tom Irwin stirring things up?
Well, my first question would be, show me the credentials that say Tom Irwin is a Republican. I haven't seen anything that would indicate that. So independent Republican might be a misnomer.
Well, the Republican Matt Moore has asked him to quit using Republican in there, but he hasn't quit that in any of his commercials or anything.
It's pretty obvious to me his goal is to dilute Haley's vote, which increases Shaheen's chances. I don't think that's going to get off the ground. I don't think it'll happen. I think it'll still be a double-digit win by Haley.
Okay, so there you go. There's a prediction on that. And my last question here today, we didn't talk about this at all, but what are we going to do about the roads? I know you were for, and, I even talked about this. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have a little increase in the gas tax, or you want to have increased fees? They didn't take up any of that, did they, in the House or the Senate?
No, and probably this particular year it was a good time not to. And the reason is the contracts are just now being let and put in place for the money that was allocated by the General Assembly in last year's budget. I want to see how this is going to go. We've got some issues with DOT trying to do some repairs internally that hadn't worked out very well. So we need to take a look at that too. But are you asking me which I would rather do?
Well, I think I know what you would rather do. You'd rather increase the gas tax.
Well, we
have such a low price on our
gas.
We do.
And to be honest with you, Ann, I think if we increase the gas tax, that's a short-term fix. I think if we do that, and I would agree to do that, but I would want a sunset on it. I would want a hard sunset on it. Because if we increase the gas tax, it would not take the full increase to keep us at a level we would need to be in the future. If you put a hard sunset on it and raise the revenue that we needed to match federal dollars to reestablish our infrastructure system in a decade, especially within a decade, you could reevaluate and probably take 50% of it back off if you wanted to.
All right, here's an idea. When you go to the gas pump, you have to punch in your zip code, and if you're out of state, you have to pay more. That's a joke, Mike. I thought of that one just now. Okay, here you go. You're from out of state. Yeah, I just thought of that. You have to punch your zip code in. Out of state, you pay 3 cents or 4 cents more a gallon. There you go.
Well, that's the idea for toll roads is 30% of our traffic is pass-through traffic.
Right.
So they're using it and not paying anything for it at this point.
That's right. Well, Mike Pitts, is there anything else you'd like to fill us in on? Did we miss any topics here this afternoon?
No, I think I probably got myself in enough hot water today. Pretty opinionated today. I was in a debate 2 weeks ago on the House floor, and the issue came up about a verbal contract.
Okay.
And the person I was debating said, well, there's nothing in writing on this. It was just an agreement. And that statement has bothered me since it was said, because that tells me there are people in the General Assembly that doesn't believe your word is worth anything anymore.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the problem with our whole society, though. You have an agreement with somebody, you know, you expect it to be true.
Well, the divorce rate shows that that's not true anymore. We have more people living together unmarried than we do married.
That's true. Hey, speaking of that, whatever happened on your bill, the bills you were working on to further the child, taking care of children in the, what was it?
Child Protective Services. Family court system. The Chief Justice is implementing through executive order in the judicial branch, several things that we were trying to achieve in my legislation. Some of it was already achieved in phase one of the legislation, but after meeting with the Chief Justice and she saw what I was trying to do, she's implementing through executive order certain things like mandatory mediation in family court system, which does two things. Takes a lot of the load off family court judges and then gives quality time for those issues that do need to be before a judge in family court. That's one of the things. The second thing that's happening with that is bill was passed this year to put a committee, joint committee in place to investigate part of the Child Protective Services, the DSS issues on child custody cases and guardian ad litems, those kind of things. Some states, and I think you and I may have talked about this before, some states do a very good job of having professional standards for their guardian ad litems, and we have good guardian ad litems, both paid and volunteer. But our professional standards are not as high, in my opinion, as they should be.
Well, there you go. Well, Mike Pitts, it's always a pleasure to have you come sit down with us. Thanks for taking the time today to talk to us.
It was good to be here. enjoyed last week at the beach with this solar panel exposed to the sun.
Got your battery recharged?
Got my battery recharged, but it didn't take long yesterday trying to catch up to run it back down.
Again. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.
Don't forget to vote.